What's up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is May 25th, 2018. And just a quick reminder, today's podcast is brought to you by Series7Podcast.com. You know, successful investing is a result of experience, education, and luck. You can't rush experience. You can't control luck, but you can acquire education. If you ever go to work in the financial services industry, you may be required to pass the Series 7 exam. This exam covers the material financial professionals are required to master before they can talk to the general public about investments. But this knowledge should not only be for financial professionals. My friend Franz at Series7Podcast.com, that's Series the number 7, Podcast.com, has put together an audio course to help financial professionals and individual investors master the material for the Series 7. This material covers the full gamut of financial products and regulations, including various equities such as common, preferred, convertible stocks, fixed income securities, closed and open-end mutual funds, warrants, options, defined contribution, and defined benefit retirement plans, and on and on. Franz lets you try before you buy. You can get 5 free sample lessons by visiting Series7Podcast.com and signing up for the free sample lessons and related quizzes, or you can just subscribe to his podcast and download the lessons. The full course, it's over 58 audio lessons, over 25 hours of audio instruction, and over 1,100 online quiz questions. If you want to purchase the lessons and quizzes bundle before July 1st, 2018, it's normally $99.99. You'll get $10 off if you use offer code RAVEN, all in lowercase letters, R-A-V-E-N, at checkout. And again, to learn more or just stop on by, check out the podcast for free, and peruse the website. It's Series, the number 7, podcast.com. All right, that disturbing noise you heard in the background while I was reading the sponsorship script was my friend Matt Stewart, who is on the line and making noise despite me asking him politely to keep it down while I read the sponsorship script. So how's it going, Matt?
Sorry about that.
I kept thinking about that the Skype thing with the English guy where his kids walk in the room when he's – did you see that?
No, I didn't. No.
There's you have to look it up before or after you get off the podcast here, but at some point the BBC goes to some guy via Skype and they're doing like geopolitical analysis or something, and the guy is in his office at home and they stream a live Skype video of him and he's sitting there giving his analysis on the North Korean conflict or whatever and all of a sudden the door pops open behind him in the office. And this little toddler just starts to kind of waddle into the room. And all of a sudden, behind the toddler comes another small child, an infant, in like a little walker. And the infant starts to kind of like waddle in the room also as this guy's on live on the BBC. And sure enough, as soon as the kids both walk in the room, it's either the nanny or his wife comes like storming in through the door. Fucking grabs both of the kids by the arms and just yanks them out of the room. And you know, like, it's just hilarious. You got to watch it. Like, you know, he said to this woman, whether it was his wife or his nanny, like, all you got to do is keep the fucking kids out of the office. Like, I'm going to be on BBC Live. And sure as shit, she probably went to the bathroom or something. And the kids just meander into the room. And there they are in the BBC. Okay, so Matt, what do you think about Carl tendering 10.5 million shares to the company for split adjusted $105.
First of all, I would say it's a smart decision on his part. He's playing with house money now for sure. One of the things that I think is fascinating about the end of the story, or as we reach the end of the story, is when you go long and you jump on the board of the company, it's amazing how much you can use the company's balance sheet governance structure to affect your strategy as an activist. So you think about the costs the company was incurring to defend itself against Ackman's assault. In addition to that, the company paid millions of dollars in investment banking fees to gear its balance sheet, do its convertible debt offering, buy that position back in, refinance a term loan, et cetera, et cetera. All of those transactions were really put in place to squeeze Bill. And now the final insult to the company is now that Carl's used them, he's getting his money out by having them buy back his stock at what would appear to be pretty outrageous prices.
Yeah, what was it that you said to me earlier before when we weren't on the podcast, but you're basically saying, look, the point of a tender is for a company to go in and buy undervalued shares. And so it's kind of a weird situation when the company's biggest shareholder sells into the tender, right?
Yeah, I mean, it reeks like a conflict of interest. You know, you're selling to yourself. You know, it's sort of a dirty move if you want to think about it that way. But it's legal, obviously cynical, but it also signals sort of the beginning of the end as far as Icon Enterprises being at the ready to defend this company. You know, and I think you have to wonder what happens next.
That is what I'm wondering. That's why I wanted to talk to you. What do you think happens next? I mean, here's the situation. He still holds a significant amount of the company stock. He's still got people on the board. The equity is priced at a ridiculous price, in my opinion. So, you know, the equity is priced at over 20 times earnings, over 20 times estimates right now.
Yeah,
and the estimates are ridiculous. The company is not in a growth mode. And the estimates assume that there's going to be something like 15% EPS growth or something year over year, I saw this morning. Don't quote me on that, but it was something like that. So the notion that they're going to even come close to what their estimates are is ridiculous, I think. And the notion that, you know, this stock is still going to trade at over a 20 multiple, I think is equally as ridiculous. So, and what happens now that the market knows that he's a seller?
Well, we have enough data points now to confirm that he's wanted to be a seller for a couple of years. There was a story going back some time ago that he tried to get off all of his stock through Jefferies, through some kind of bought deal that I guess Bill leaked to the press. And it seems like that agitated Carl even more. And so he doubled down on a short squeeze. But now we know for a fact that he was trying to get off as many shares as he possibly could into this tender.
And ultimately, that was at a split-adjusted $56, I think the bid was then, or $52. So he got more than double that.
So, you know, the stock has obviously been trading with a liquidity premium because of his closely held position. The additional shares closely held by the management of the company. Index funds obviously own the stock because they have to. So there's not a lot of free trading shares out there. Plus Bill was short, of course. So it was a dynamic situation to create a liquidity premium. Now that he's signaled that he wants out, it makes little sense for secondary market investors to be paying a liquidity premium for the stock. And again, capitalizing the earnings stream or cash flow stream or whatever metric you want to use at a premium multiple to the market seems absurd when we consider the quality of earnings that we talked about in the call the other day.
What do you think happens from here? I mean, you sent me a text today. There's never been a better time to be short Herbalife, which admittedly is a text that you've sent me probably 300 times over the last 5 years. So what makes now different? Or are you just basically fucking around and just...
No, well, I think it... For sure, the hedge fund story now seems to fade into the woodwork. So the company has to do it on its own, so to speak. You know, the company has to trade exclusively on fundamentals. I mean, look, there's still a position that's held by Icon, but you have to assume he's going to try to get off that stock as quickly as he can. And so you're stuck with... owning an MLM without activist hedge funds involved that has to survive on its own. And, you know, what multiple do people want to pay of cash flow for that? I got to think 12 to 14 times at best.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about 12 to 14 times free cash flow, that means the stock has a long way down to go still. Look, I'll weigh in with my two cents. It's obvious he wants out. You're right that he's wanted out since he asked Jefferies for a bid. That was, Jesus, I think that was 2 years ago. I think that was 2 summers ago at this point. Because I remember I was at the beach when that happened, so I know it was the summer, and it wasn't last summer. So that was like 2 years ago. And he's put the screws to Ackman, obviously, since then. Ackman has left. He's getting now twice the bid for his stock that he would have if he sold. I mean, it was really masterfully done on his part. If it was the case that Bill leaked that to the press, like you said, and that's kind of ultimately what came back to bite him in the ass, and then it was masterfully played by Icahn. I think everybody knew at the time that he was probably looking for a legitimate bid, myself included. But you know, he held on, and he had the resources and the capital to just kind of hold. And like you said, the company was able to leverage its balance sheet in order to kind of gear the stock and lock up so much of the float that the stock had nowhere to go but up. And yeah, what you're left now with is basically, you know, I said this on Twitter today, is somewhat of a like rotting carcass of a company. I mean, the company's not dead. It's still generating hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. But the net income trends, the volume point trends, the free cash flow trends, all are pointing downwards if you look at them over the course of the last like 5 years. If you look at like the trailing 12-month figures over the course of the last 5 years, those all look to still be in decline. They look to be stagnating at best. The company doesn't look like it's a growth story at all. And on top of that, now you have, you know, $1.5 billion of additional debt on the balance sheet that the company previously didn't have to deal with. So going into this, they had, and really, I guess that was the victim during this whole kind of, you know, this whole fiasco. The victim was the balance sheet. They tapped the balance sheet and they tapped their cash flow stream to kind of leverage against, like you're saying, to the tune of billions of dollars. And they were able to effectively reduce the share count of the company and kind of stave off any type of serious repricing of the stock lower. And now, what do you have? Now you have the guy who was pretty much putting a bid under the company, if not actually putting a bid, then putting a bid under it in terms of confidence. You have him stepping out of the way, and now you have a balance sheet with the most debt it's had on it in, you know, I think theoretically forever. I'm not sure, but I think this is the most debt that they've ever had. You got Johnson's gone, DeSimone's gone, Walsh will probably be out the door. Alan Hoffman just sold all of his stock. So, I mean, could this really be the time to short it? I mean, the stock is, like I said, pre-split, still at, you know, $99 or $98. I don't know. All signs kind of point to this actually being a good point to short the stock. But who knows? I mean, what do you think?
Well, the company's expensive, I would say, on any kind of price to cash flow metric. So what is it, $9 billion, the enterprise value? So it takes 18 years to get your money out or something. I don't know what the exact numbers are. I haven't calculated the math on Carl's original position, but it would seem to me he's executed this transaction and now appears to be playing with house money. So I have to assume that he's recovered his original capital, got that back out of the company and then some. And so no matter what he sells the residual number of shares at, he's going to be ahead of the game. So I don't really worry too much about him punting the balance of his stock at 45 or 41 or 37 or whatever the number is. You know, it would seem to me he's done here. He won't. It's unlikely he's going to want to continue to have his legal team, his representatives on the board, traveling to Torrance, California, or El Segundo, or where the headquarters are, and monkeying around with this anymore. Because there's just nothing in it for him anymore. He's captured most of what he can. So he'll probably want to move on to another idea. That would be my guess. As for Bill, who knows what he's doing? Wouldn't it be funny if he were to get short at this point? But I don't.
Yeah, I thought about that today too. I don't know if he would.
Speculation. I mean, my guess is if he were to have taken a position or taken a short position at the top of the tender that he probably would have kept it quiet this time around.
Probably, yeah, probably. But I could see him doing that. I think there's a lot of people on the street that would just walk away and say, you know, look, I got killed on this and that's it. If there was anybody that, for better or for worse, you know, you can call it resiliency or you can call it stupidity, but if there's anybody I could see turning around and coming back in and saying I'm fucking short again, it's him. Or wouldn't it be interesting, if another major investor or another short seller came out and shorted the stock here, now that Icon's out of the way?
The irony of value investing, whether you're long or short, is the lower the stock price goes, the more delicious it gets if you're long, and the higher it goes, the more delicious it gets if you have a short thesis. So the higher this stock traded, the more appetizing it got if you honestly believe that it's a low quality company and that's overvalued. So look, there is a compelling argument that it's a good short just on valuation. Now you have the tailwind of the liquidity premium being let out of the balloon.
Well, and you have the extra debt on the balance sheet. You have what may be regulatory interest globally. You have the decline in North America. You have year-over-year comps in China looking ugly. So who knows? I mean,
yeah, and still the fact that at the customer level or the distributor level, it's a 4 million member pyramid. It has not grown in 5 years. You know, it's been stuck at that 4 million number for years. So, you know, just the mathematics alone, in order, you know, hypothetically, for the pyramid to grow to 6 million people, the number of people that would have to be prospected
would be stunning.
Would be staggering. Yeah. You know, it's an enormous number of people. You know, assume on a best case scenario, their conversion rates were 10%. So, you know, 10% of the people they contact sign up to become distributors. So to sign up the 2 million people they've signed up, that means they had to knock on the doors of 20 million people. Is it 20 or 40? Forget. Yeah, 20 million people. And then those numbers compound over time, you know. So it's no small feat for them to continue to be able to find these new people every year. That's for sure. Now, I don't know what their conversion rates are, but I can tell you this. When I used to run direct marketing campaigns, if you ended up in the low single digits, those rates were often considered home runs. If you were marketing to a warm list, otherwise known as your own customer base or what have you, you know, and you ended up in the low double digits, those results were considered home runs. So these people are out prospecting, cold calling, really, if you want to think about it. So one wouldn't expect their conversion rates to be very high.
And lest we forget, the public sentiment on multi-level marketing companies, you know, look, we're not going to get any help from the government and the Trump administration. We have a Secretary of Education who is a wholly owned subsidiary of Amway. So I don't think the government is going to be stepping in and doing anything other than, but you have this put option of the FTC affiliated monitors still trying to make sure the company is in compliance. And I'm skeptical that they are, but I'll wait to see what transpires with that, if anything. So you have that kind of put option. And then you also have the put option of, has the mainstream sentiment about these multi-level marketing companies changed at all with the John Oliver piece going out, with Betting on Zero going out, you know, looking at Herbalife specifically? I mean, this goes back to our conversation we had on the last podcast as to whether or not the human race is going to evolve to understand that these companies are mathematically inherently against you from the get-go. It is not the same as going out and, you know, starting your own Coca-Cola dealership and just trying to use regular market segmentation and regular sales practices to just sell a product at a margin and make a little cash from it, and that's it. You know, it's not a lemonade stand. It's the, a lot of the business has to do with recruitment. Like you're saying, as the CEO said himself, the recruitment is the lifeblood of the company. As John Hempton said in his 2013 blog post that I was reading again today, all, you know, I visited a nutrition club. All the customers were distributors. All the customers were distributors. I mean, that's the definition of a pyramid scheme. That's specifically what the FTC is stepping in to prevent from happening now. So what do you think about those put options? I mean, do you think public awareness has changed at all? Do you think affiliated monitors could still have some type of negative effect on the company? I mean, first off, I'll say this, Matt. I can't believe that they're adhering to the FTC guidelines of... I just assumed that they would just shut down North American operations, but it looks like they're going to try to do it.
Well, I have no evidence to suggest they aren't in compliance.
I don't either, right.
So, you know, that would just be speculation. I assume that the monitor is doing his or her job effectively. So I have no other reason to assume otherwise.
Well, aside from common sense, which,
yeah, I mean,
which would dictate to you that, you know, look, they need to have 8 out of 10 people that they sell the product to be retail. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but they got to find those people, right? And so they're finding them, however they're doing it, they're finding them. So, but again, you know, it's sort of one of the ironies of these companies is the bigger they get, the harder it becomes, you know, and that's because you have to replace your customer base. Other companies, the bigger they get, the better it becomes because you have a lot of repeat purchase activity and a lot of repeat customers. So, you know, think of a fish pond, you know, once you've taken with a finite number of fish in it, once you've taken X number of fish out, there's less fish to catch. I mean, it's a good analogy. So the put options you talked about, those are all nice tailwinds. I think the recruiting that's required is a tailwind. The valuation is a tailwind. Icon leaving is probably a tailwind. It's not an easy lift if you're long. And that's one of the reasons why I've never wanted to be long this stock, even though the price has obviously performed very well. It's just not a brand that appeals to me on any level fundamentally or strategically.
I mean, the long kind of, you know, really the one of the only long cases that you could have made in the past was maybe Icon would LBO the company. I mean, nobody really thought that was going to happen, but because it would have been way too expensive, and obviously it's way too expensive now, but this him leaving is about as certain as you can get that he's not going to LBO the company. It also sheds interesting light on, you know, I've been granted permission to buy up to 50% of shares, you know, like what a load of shit that was.
Well, it's all the talking in your book, right?
Right.
But that's, what is it? All's fair in love and war. I think that's all fair game.
I think so too, but I still think
everybody
it was nonsense.
Involved.
I mean, that ran as a headline, right, when that happened. They ran it as a headline as if he had bought 50% of the company.
Well, sure, but I mean, anybody who's done public relations for a living knows that part of the being successful in the world of public relations is you feed the media what you want them to say. You know, so they ask you a question and you spin the answer to what you want your message to be.
Like FTC declares Herbalife is not a pyramid scheme?
Well, whatever message you want to spin. I mean, there's an entire industry of these people out there who spend their living crafting, quote unquote, the truth, according to me. And that's a professional game in and of itself. So nothing that anybody said along the way in this battle, including you and me, should be taken as what's the word I would use? Totally unvarnished. You know, everybody's talking their everybody's sure. talking their book. Everybody's.
Did you get Did you get short today again?
I did not. No, yeah. I was working all day, and it wasn't until after the market closed that I even read the headline that the tender result had taken.
Another interesting thing that I pointed out this morning, I did a blog post real early in the morning, was that there was no language in Icahn's little letter that he wrote this morning indicating that he had intentions to hold on to the rest of his shares. So one of the things that he had been notorious for throughout the course of this whole campaign is anytime he made a public statement, it was always like, I haven't sold a single share and I don't plan on selling a single share. And he kept saying that over and over and over again. And he
made
it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he try to tender all of his stock?
No, he tried to tender. Oh, well, I did. I believe so. He was only able to tender $10.5 million. I think he was trying to tender $11.4 million, which would have been all that he could have tendered. It would
That was the result of it, but my understanding.
No, the result I think was $10.5 million. I read in the press release after hours.
Well, that's something worth looking into, because my understanding was that he basically said, "Look, you can have as much as you want."
I'll read it to you right now if you just give me one sec. But when I looked at it early this morning. All right, so
my understanding was if he had not tendered most if not all of his stock, the offering would have been undersubscribed. So, but I could be wrong about that.
Well, for a while, the offer was underneath the stock price, so there was no reason to tender. So here's what he wrote this morning. Carl wrote, Icahn Enterprises is Herbalife's largest shareholder and is one of the company's longest-standing shareholders, having first acquired shares at the end of 2012, almost 6 years ago. In fact, of the 29 long equity positions currently held by IEP in its investment segment, there are only three positions that IEP has held longer than Herbalife. Yesterday, IEP tendered its Herbalife shares into the company's self-tender offer. Of the shares we tendered, at most only 11.4 million could possibly be purchased in the tender, which would still leave us as the company's largest shareholder with at least 34.3 million shares. So that's what he said this morning. And then I believe it was the Wall Street Journal article that I read that said he tendered 10.5 million. And I will read that to you right now. The Wall Street.
But those were the results. Mr.
Yes. Icahn is selling 10.5 million of his shares worth about 500 million, according
to those are the results. That's not synonymous with how many of his shares he actually offered to the company. My understanding is he offered his entire position.
He did that prior, I believe, too, didn't he? I mean, the company only had $600 million earmarked for the tender. So he made up. He sold 10.5.
Right, but if you want to get your pro rata share, you have to offer up as much stock as you can, assuming you're competing with other institutions.
Oh, okay, I understand what you're saying.
Right. So okay. Let's say hypothetically, I don't know what the numbers are, but let's say Carl owns 30 million, and the rest of the street owns 30 million. They all offer up their stock to be tendered. You know, those shareholders should get 50% each of the
right
whatever the allotment is. You know, so in order to get your maximum benefit, you have to tender as many shares as you possibly can.
As possible, so you get a bigger slice of the pie.
Right, and so.
So the Wall Street Journal says Mr. Icahn is selling 10.5 million of his shares, valued at about $550 million, to the company as part of a tender offer. That would leave him with more than 21% stake. Blah 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 blah. Nothing.
Yeah, the release you want to read is you go to ir.herbalife.com. There's the
filing, the SEC filing.
The company's press release where they announce the results of the tender. They tell you how many shares were tendered.
All right, let's just take a look.
Total.
All right. Herbalife announced today the preliminary results of its modified Dutch auction tender offer, which expired at 5 p.m. on Thursday, to purchase up to an aggregate of $600 million of the company's common shares. Based on the preliminary count by Computershare Trust Company, a total of approximately 49.7 million common shares of the company were properly tendered and not properly withdrawn at or below the price of $52.50. So 49.7 million. In accordance with the terms and conditions of the offer and based on preliminary count, the company expects to accept for payment a total of 11.4 million at 52.5 for a total cash cost of approximately 600 million, excluding right. fees and expenses relating to the tender offer. So he must have right. put up a significant amount more, right?
Yeah, so 2.5 billion of stock was tendered, and they can only afford to buy 600 million of it.
Right.
So whoever tendered in the price range that they talked about gets their pro rata share of the allotment.
Right.
And so for Carl to get
10 million, he must have fucking stock, put them all up, right? I understand.
He was the lion's share of the tender.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, but knowing that that's what would happen, probably, right?
Yeah. So he's basically broadcast to the world he wants out.
Well, if you take that as a broadcast to the world that he wants out, or if you take that as he's offering up the shares that he needs to offer up in order for him to be able to tender 10 million shares.
Sure.
You know, it's like an administrative thing, you know. Under no circumstances would they have accepted all of his shares. So it's an empty gesture simply to create an administrative instance where he's able to tender 10.5 million shares. So I don't really take that as him broadcasting that he wants to sell it all, even though I do think he probably would have if he could have.
Well, he's certainly not getting out of the way in favor of other institutional investors, that's for sure.
Well, I think Route One just sold more than half their stake. Go ahead.
He's not doing any favors to anybody else out there. You know, he wants to get off as much stock as he can possibly get off.
Yeah. So where do you see this thing going forward? We'll wrap it up because I know it's a holiday weekend and you got shit to do and I got shit to do. What are your closing thoughts?
Well, I think increasingly the story will trade independent of the activist hedge fund story. The company's going to have to fend for itself and market itself as an investor, as an investment to the street, so to speak, independent of these billionaires buying huge blocks, shorting huge blocks, and we'll find out what that's worth probably sooner than not.
Do you think the stock will reprice based on that? I mean, I think it has to.
Well, it already did today, didn't it? I mean,
well, that's, you know, yeah, but that's, I mean, significantly repriced.
Well, the stock dropped 10% today, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
So.
But the fair market value for the stock is probably closer to $30 a share, in my opinion.
The company's lost $1.5 to $2 billion in enterprise value in the last
8 hours.
So. yeah, I mean, it's not. You know, I mean, price per share is one thing, but you got to look at the volatility in the enterprise value of the company. I mean, that's a significant change.
No, it isn't. And I'll tell you why it's not. Because the enterprise value should never have gotten as high as it is to begin with. This should be a $4 or $5 billion enterprise value company, or $5 or $6 billion enterprise value company. In no world should this company have a $10 or $9 billion enterprise value when they're generating, you know, a couple $100 million a year in cash. I don't know what it is. It's somewhere between three.
Well,
and five.
then you should have been short.
Well,
you know,
I'm asking for your opinion, and then I want to tell you what to say. That's how I want this to work.
Well, I've always felt like when the company traded at $9 or $10 billion in enterprise value, it seemed a bit of an absurd valuation for this company.
Interestingly enough, the company, if you want a small feather in your cap, the split-adjusted price of the company still has never hit Tim Ramey's $120 price target. He had a $120 price target on the stock forever. He's another one. He's gone quiet, huh? I guess he's taking his victory lap.
Didn't Tim lower his price target, though?
I don't know.
You know, he's another one who was talking his book. I mean, if you look at it in the fine print of his research, he had all kinds of conflicts. So.
Yeah, like he was an Herbalife distributor. There's one conflict. He was trying to do investment banking business with the company, possibly. I don't know what the other one was.
Yeah.
I heard from several people that witnessed it that him and John DeSimone took a soiree around. That's not the right word, but they went on a little walking tour of New York City at one point and actually went by Bill's office. And like they went out for drinks or something. At some point, DeSimone and I heard from somebody that they saw DeSimone and Ramey gallivanting together around New York City months ago. This is 6 months ago, a year ago.
Did somebody catch them drinking vanilla shakes in Central Park?
I'm sure it wasn't vanilla shakes. In the words of John Hampton in 2013, these things suck, you know? Or Carl Icahn, I don't like them. They give me a lot of gas, you know? What a fucking farce. Like,
I have to say,
people that are defending the company, the company's biggest shareholder is on national television saying he doesn't like the product. Like, it's just such a fucking farce. It really is. Sorry, go ahead.
I've never had a Herbalife shake. I can readily admit that. I've never used any of their products.
You know, they got photographs of Charlie Gasparino sitting in his office with a box full of Herbalife bars on his desk. It's just like, it's hilarious. I find it hilarious. It's the worst product in the world, right? And it's just, you know, here, Charlie, take a box, you know? I think at one point when they were doing their like public relations campaign, I guess when Alan Hoffman, after he had come on, somebody told me, oh, I think maybe it was the guy from Value Walk. I can't remember, but somebody told me, like, hey, they sent me a care package with a bunch of inventory in it. Like, they sent me a fucking couple canisters of shake mix and, like, a letter, you know, like, oh, we here at Herbalife have been on the media a lot, and we want you to experience the product for yourself, you know. Like, that's a nice write-off.
Well, I think the other thing you have going for you as a tailwind is, you know, interest rates continue to tick up. So,
oh yeah,
you know, that has a double whammy effect on the company. A, the multiple in the stocks should trade off just as we look at yield curves, and secondly, any time in the future they have to refinance their debt yet again, the cost of capital should go up. So,
right, and rates probably won't go too much higher, but they will tick higher. But yeah, that's a very good point. Anyways, you got anything else, man? Because you are the only thing standing in between me and Memorial Day weekend.
I wouldn't want to let me be in the way of you getting to Atlantic City, so.
Yeah, right. Those days are long gone, brother. Long gone. Anyways, all right, Matt. Well, thanks for taking the time to shoot the shit with us here for a second. And just want to remind everybody before we leave that today's podcast was brought to you by Series7Podcast.com. Remember, successful investing, it's a result of experience, education, and luck. You cannot rush experience. You can't control luck, but you can acquire education. If you ever go to work in the financial services industry, you may be required to pass the Series 7 exam. This exam covers the material financial professionals. I just knocked the thing over. I'm starting the weekend already. Where are we? God, this sponsor is never going to come back, is he? I hope. Please go to his website. It's Series7Podcast.com, for the love of God. My friend Franz at Series7Podcast.com has put together an audio course to help financial professionals and individual investors master the material for the Series 7. This material covers the full gamut of financial products and regulations, including the various equities such as common, preferred, and convertible stocks, fixed income securities, closed and open-end mutual funds, warrants, options, defined contribution, and defined benefit retirement plans, and on and on. Franz lets you try before you buy. You can get 5 free sample lessons by visiting his website, series7podcast.com, and signing up for the free sample lessons and related quizzes, or just subscribe to his podcast and download the lessons. The full course consists of 58 audio lessons, which is over 25 hours of audio instruction, and over 1,100 online quiz questions. If you want to purchase the $99.99 lessons and quizzes bundle before July 1st, 2018, you can get $10 off by using offer code RAVEN, that's R-A-V-E-N, in all lowercase letters, at checkout. You can learn more at Series 7, that's Series, the number 7, podcast.com. You guys go check Franz out, and I am going to head out and enjoy my Memorial Day weekend. I might pop back on this weekend because I got a couple things that I want to talk about. But if I don't, I hope you guys sincerely have a lovely Memorial Day weekend, and we will catch up soon. Peace!